Now, friends, we've come to the fifth chapter of Hosea. And very frankly, this section here is not what you'd call a very happy section. Well, the reason that we find not a very pleasant section right through here is because of the sin of the northern kingdom and the fact that judgment was coming upon them. Now, there are several things that we need to keep in mind, and I'd like to call your attention to them, because with that background, it makes this a more difficult section to understand. You must remember the background of the prophet, where everything that's being said is on the background of a prophet who, as a young man, fell in love with, I'm sure, a lovely young lady. I'm sure she was beautiful. And then she became a prostitute. I imagine that the money and the fact that she probably would be able to get the luxuries that she could not have gotten up there in the hill country of Ephraim. So she went into the oldest profession that's known to mankind. And God sent this man to marry her anyway. In spite of that, he loved her. He married her. And I'm sure that it brought disgrace upon him. And then he had three children, and she went out again, played the harlot, and he went and bought her and brought her back to himself. He had a broken heart. He had a broken home. And with that background, he walks out into the nation Israel, the northern kingdom, and says that God says that you're playing a harlot. You have been unfaithful to him. And I know exactly how he feels. He loves you. And he'll never let you go, but he's going to judge you because of your sin. Now, with that background, let's look here at chapter 5. And what we find here is that Israel plays the harlot. And we have now God and the faithless nation, Israel. Here in the fifth chapter, Israel turns from God altogether, and God turns from Israel, and deterioration within follows. Now, first of all, God condemns the leadership in the nation, the priest and the king. Will you listen now to verse 1 of chapter 5 of Hosea? Hear ye this, O priests, and hearken, ye house of Israel, and give ear, O house of the king, for judgment is toward you, because ye have been a snare on Mizpah and a net spread upon Tabor. Now, Mizpah was in the southwest section of the kingdom, and Mount Tabor was way up in the northeast section of the kingdom. And actually, at this time, they were worshiping under every green tree. You'd find idols all over the land. And he goes on to say now, because of the fact that the priests and the king represented the leadership of the nation. And we've already seen as the people, so the priests. The priest doesn't rise any higher than the lowest in society, and he ought to be setting an example, and that's true of the king. Now, unfortunately, we're living in a day in our nation when the leadership in the nation, the spiritual leadership, and the political leadership is certainly not worthy of emulation, very candidly. Liberalism being predominant in theology, and liberalism predominant today in politics, and news media that's altogether liberal, that actually is brainwashing the people. And you have the same situation that you have here. You have a spiritual deterioration and a deterioration and decline in a nation that will finally bring it to destruction. And that's what happened to this nation here and furnishes a pattern for us today. Now, verse 2, and the revolters are gone deeply into slaughter, though I've been a rebuker of them all. God rebuked them for their brutality. That was murder, that was violence, and then that was warfare. Now, may I say that I may take a little different position today than the average conservative, and will you listen to me very carefully? We have fought probably the most disgraceful war that was ever fought in Vietnam and in the Near East against the warnings of generals who knew and who actually made a profession of being Christian. I think there were, like General Douglas MacArthur, that we should never fight a land war in Asia. We made a terrible military blunder by getting involved in that. And I believe that we made a terrible mistake and that it's tragic what's happened in that land. And the question still remains, did we help them? No. And I'm not sure, but what this is a judgment of God upon us and actually upon the white man. We have come through a day that's been called the white man's day, and it has been. At first, the sons of Ham didn't do any better. Egypt was under sons of Ham, so was Babylon, Assyria, and those were great pagan nations. And then we find that the sons of Japheth called a white man. And the white man has probably made the greatest blunder of all. And the great blunder is this. We had the Word of God. We had the Bible. And we didn't send missionaries as we should have sent. We didn't get the Word of God out to China. And God closed the door finally. And I say God closed the door, not communism. And then the same thing has happened now in these nations. We didn't send Bibles over there, so we sent bullets over there and bombs. We didn't send men over there to give out the Word of God, so we sent boys to die on the battlefield. I don't know. Maybe we ought to wake up today. Maybe we haven't reached the place where we can take God to the end of His universe and dismiss Him and tell Him we don't need Him anymore. My feeling is that we're feeling the effects of the judgment of God upon us. And that's what happened to this nation. Now, that is a pattern for any nation, by the way. Now, he says here in verse 3, I know Ephraim and Israel is not hidden from me. In other words, God says, I know what I'm talking about. Because I know Ephraim and I know Israel. And as we saw last time, Ephraim now is the name not only for just the one tribe, but for the whole 10 tribes that's called Israel, the northern kingdom. And as I said last time, I'm not sure whether it's used in the framework of being a term of endearment, and I rather think that, or whether it's really a nickname that he's giving, actually of ridicule to them. I think it's really a term of endearment, but there's another reason. Ephraim was the very center of the idolatry. Now, the first golden calf that was set up by Jeroboam was in Bethel, and then later on, one was put in Samaria. And both of those places, I judge, are in the tribe of Ephraim. Now, I know that Bethel is probably actually in the tribe of Benjamin, but when the revolt came, this area went with the tribe of Ephraim and with the northern kingdom, so that the very heart of the idolatry is centered in Ephraim. And because of that, God gives that label to all of them, because this is the very heart of idolatry, and that was the great problem of the nation. That was the great sin of the nation, of turning from God. Now he says, I know Ephraim. God knows what he's talking about. And Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, thou committest harlotry, and Israel is defiled. That is, this calf worship, worship of Baal, that had been set up in this tribe, had defiled all of the other 10 tribes, and even had its effect upon the southern kingdom. There's no question about that. So that the great sin was of a people who had the Word of God and who knew God and have now turned from Him, and they no longer know Him and no longer worship Him. And as a result, gross immorality, deterioration sets in every part of the nation, even the ecology of the nation. God said, even the animals, even the ground. And I think the curse of God is still upon that land. I can't see that a few little irrigated spots has made a desert bloom like the rose. If it does, then a rose by any other name smells just the same way, and there are not many roses to smell in that land, even today, my friend. Now, will you notice, verse 5, "And the pride of Israel doth testify to his face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity." Now, God says, they're coming down. I'm going to bring them down. "Judah also shall fall with them." He doesn't say at the same time, but he says Judah finally will be brought down. And both of these kingdoms were carried away into captivity, and at different times separated by about a century. Northern kingdom went to Assyria, southern kingdom taken to Babylon. And from that, there has never been the return that the Word of God speaks about, as we've attempted to indicate. And this book, I think, makes that abundantly clear, that when God brings them back, the world's going to know it, and there'll be peace in the land then. Now, will you notice, he says also, verse 6, "They shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek the Lord, but they shall not find him. He hath withdrawn himself from them." In other words, they have deserted God, and when trouble comes upon them, and they've tried every other resource, God is the last resource they've come to, why, they won't find him. He's withdrawn himself from them. It's like years ago, the story is told, it's a whimsical little story, that a ship was crossing the Atlantic and hit an iceberg, and this might have been the Titanic, I don't know, and the captain sent out the order all over the ship to prayers, to prayers. And one woman aboard the ship came rushing up to the captain. She says, "Captain, has it come to this?" In other words, if you're going to pray, it's the last resort. And that's the way a great many people treat God. He is sort of like the spare tire. We hope we don't have a flat, but if we do, we've got a spare tire back there, and we'll put it on. But we hope we don't have to do it. And that was the condition of these people. And that's the condition of a great many people actually today that are making a profession of Christ. He's sort of an emergency measure. He's like a life insurance policy. He's a spare tire that you put in the trunk of the car, hoping that you won't have to use it. He's like a fire extinguisher that you have around. These are things that you just hope you don't have to use, but they're there in case the emergency arises. Now he goes on here in verse 7. He says, "They have dealt treacherously against the Lord, for they have begotten strange children." That is, they're strange to God. They didn't bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, in the discipline and in the instruction of the Lord. And God had taught these people. Go back and read Deuteronomy again. God says you're to teach this to your children. You're to put it on your doorpost. You're to teach them, even when you get in bed at night. You continue to teach them the Word of God. But he says, "You've forgotten strange children. They don't know me. Now shall a month devour them with their portions. Blow ye the horn in Gibeah, and the trumpet in Ramah. Cry aloud at Beth-Aven," and Beth-Aven is Bethel, "after thee, O Benjamin." And that part of the tribe of Benjamin apparently had gone over with the northern kingdom. And as a result, why, the warning is to go out all over the land, warning the people. Now, we come to verse 9. "Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel have I made known that which shall surely be." In other words, it wasn't for the fact God had not warned them. He had warned them, and he had rebuked them. and they still would not hear. Verse 10, the princes of Judah were like those who remove the boundaries. Therefore, I will pour out my wrath upon them like water. In other words, the southern kingdom had attempted to apparently move its boundaries far north as it possibly could. There apparently was always a real division caused by the fact they could not agree on just where the boundary was. And God has a message from Hosea even to the southern kingdom, but he primarily was the prophet to the northern kingdom. Now he goes on, and he's still using the term Ephraim, and as we said, it's used 36 times from beginning at the fourth chapter on through this little prophecy here. And he says here, Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment. That is, he willingly followed idols and the worship of the idols. He went with the crowd. Therefore will I be unto Ephraim like a moth, and to the house of Judah like rottenness. Now I think this is quite interesting, the figures of speech that the prophets used. And may I say, and I do not mean to make a play upon words, but there's a wonderful profit to you in studying the prophets, because they reached out into nature and used certain figures of speech that are quite helpful in understanding the Word of God. Now he says, God's going to be unto Ephraim like a moth. Now, what does a moth do? Well, he gets in your closet there, and if you don't have mothballs in there, and you heard about the fellow went to the drugstore where he bought some mothballs, brought them back, and he said, these don't work. The druggist said, what do you mean they don't work? Well, he says, I stayed up half the night throwing these balls at the moths, and I never hit a one of them. Well, friends, moths are something you just don't want in the closet where your clothes are, because in just one night, they can ruin a suit of clothes. They can ruin a very valuable garment, especially if it's a wool garment. Now, God says, I'm going to beat Ephraim like a moth. I'll judge him in a hurry. And to the house of Judah, I'll be like rottenness. It takes a board or a foundation of a house a long time to become rotten. God says to Ephraim, the northern kingdom, I'm going to judge you now. But the rottenness is already set in the southern kingdom, and finally there will be the collapse, but it'll take longer for that to take place. The foundations today are being removed in every way that's imaginable in our nation, and that which is left, rottenness has already set in. It may take a while, friends, but we just can't continue in sin like this, and it's enough to make us weep today. Now, will you notice verse 13? He says, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound. Now, you see, Ephraim's sick and sick nigh unto death, and Judah saw his wound. In fact, he got hurt and was hurt at this time because Assyria came against him but didn't take him into captivity. Then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jareb, yet could he not heal you nor cure you of your wound. You went to a quack doctor. You thought that actually you would turn to the king of Assyria and he'd help you. Well, he's the one who's going to take you into captivity. You've appealed to the wrong one, by the way. And here's another marvelous figure of speech that the prophet uses, draws it from out yonder nature. For I will be unto Ephraim like a lion, and like a young lion to the house of Judah. I will tear and go away. I'll take away, and none shall rescue him. Now, he said, first to Ephraim, I'm going to be a lion. But I'm just going to be a young lion, a lion cub, to the southern kingdom. Now, what does that mean? Well, it just simply means this. I was looking at television the other night at one of these nature pictures, and I enjoy them very much, of how attempts being made throughout the world today to preserve the wild animals of the world, because many of them are becoming extinct throughout the world. They're suffering from man's sin. You may be sure of that. And so there's an attempt to preserve them. They showed lions and this female lion and how she protected her cubs. And these little fellas, they just looked like great big, you know, roly-poly dog or a cat. And you'd feel like you'd like to have one as a pet. But, oh, that mother lion, she was vicious. When an animal came up near her, I tell you, she really went after that animal. Little old cubs, they just kept playing. Now, God says to the northern kingdom, I'm a lion. I intend to destroy you now. But I'm just a cub lion to the southern kingdom. But what happens to a cub lion? He's going to grow up. And the day will come when he'll become just as vicious as mama lion was. And so the day's coming. It's a warning to the southern kingdom. You can see here, I'll be a young lion to the house of Judah. He says, I will tear and go away. In other words, God says, I'm going to let you go into captivity. And you can whine and cry all you want to. But God judges sin. And God does that today, friends. No one's really getting by with sin. We fail the young people today. And they've scattered throughout the world. You find venereal disease is in epidemic stages today. And they say, what in the world has happened? Well, I'll tell you what's happened. You don't get by with sin. God says you don't get by with it. And if you can get by with it, friends, you'll contradict the word of God. But you're not getting by with it because God can wait. He will judge sin. All right, until next time, may God richly bless you, my beloved.